All right. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Life Walk with Christ God. And I am looking here. We're somehow or another, we lost our little link here for my intro. So let's not worry about that. Tonight, we're going to talk about something different. And like I said, welcome to the Trim Radio Network and Life Walk with Christ God. We always have a few hiccups here and there every once in a while, but we always get through them. So last week we were talking and we were in Ezekiel. And let me get some light on here. Oh, there we go. And we were going through that. Today, I think is what we're going to do is we are going to kind of go through. There's a couple spots in Jeremiah that, and I'm looking backward here, that we were going through, and a lot of it has to do, and I don't know if you paid attention to the Bible, you notice there's feet in there a lot. We saw that with Moses, and when Moses went up and was talking to God in the burning bush on the mountain, he said, take off your sandals. The ground in which you're standing on is holy ground. So, of course, that's the first sign that you have of we are walking with God in God's way. So, and of course, we saw this with Christ, too. And in Matthew, you know, walking with Christ, walking with God. We've seen this in Jeremiah where God was upset at them. And let me see if we can find that here. I was just working on another show as we did this, but God said that he is so angry at them because they like to wander and wandering on their feet and doing the same thing over and over again, committing sin over and over again. So what we're going to do is we're going to dive in here. And as soon as I get to that spot, and let's just go on down here to Jeremiah 15.
And the Lord said to me, even if Moses and Samuel were to stand before me, my heart would not go out to this people. Send them away from my presence. Let them go. And if they ask you, where shall we go? Tell them, this is what the Lord says. Those destined for death, to death. Those for the sword, to the sword. Those for starvation, to starvation. Those for captivity, to captivity. I will send four kinds of destroyers against them, declares the Lord. The sword to kill, and the dogs to drag away, and the birds, and the wild animals to devour and destroy. I will make them abhorrent to all the kingdoms of the earth because of what Manasseh, son of Hezekiah, king of Judah, did in Jerusalem.
And you get kind of what God is saying there. We get to that point to where he is so angry with them because they keep going back and making idols, worshiping crystals, worshiping stones, worshiping wood, the Asherah poles, everything. And Hezekiah was just awful with all of this and just had angered God so much that he's finally had enough. He has had enough. And we know this. And as we're going through it, we can see that God is telling him exactly how I'm going to do it. This is what's going to happen to you. If you cannot come back, if you cannot repent, if you will not be sincere when you do these things, and he's clear, Jeremiah in Jeremiah 15, the Lord said unto me, pray not for this people, pray not for this people. They're no good. When they fast, I will not hear their cry. And when they offer burnt offering and an oblation, I will not accept them, but I will consume them by the sword. and by the famine and by the pestilence. And I said, ah, Lord, behold, the prophets say unto them, ye shall not see the sword, neither shall ye have famine, but I will give you assured rest in this place. Then the Lord said unto me, the prophets prophesy lies in my name. I sent them not. And we're seeing this more and more today. And you could hear all these people that are, you know, and this is Jeremiah 14, verse 14. And we're seeing this more. God is making it clear. He didn't send them. He didn't do this. And when they started sacrificing children and everything, he said, it never entered my mind. And he wasn't saying that, you know, he didn't know it. He was making it very clear that it did not enter his mind that they would do these things. He never asked them to do it. So why are you doing it upon yourselves? Why are you doing this yourself? It was never even brought up. Why did you make a decision to do this? So he said, then the Lord said unto me, the prophets prophesy lies in my name. And then here we go. I sent them not, neither have I commanded them, neither spoke unto them. They prophesy unto you a false vision and divination and a thing of naught and the deceit of their heart. Thus saith the Lord concerning the prophets that prophesy in my name, and I send them not. Yet they say, sword and famine shall not be in this land. By sword and famine shall those prophets be consumed. God is making sure when they start saying this, he's going to give them exactly what they said wasn't going to happen, the exact opposite. And the people whom they prophesy shall be cast out in the streets of Jerusalem because of the famine and the sword, and they shall have none to bury them, their wives, nor their sons, nor their daughters, for I will pour their wickedness upon them. Therefore, thou shalt say this word unto them, let my eyes run down with tears, night and day, and let them not cease. For the virgin daughter of my people is broken with a great breach and a very grievous blow. If I go forth into the field, then behold, the slain with the sword. And if I enter into the city, then behold, them that are sick with famine. Yea, both the prophet and the priest go about into this land that they know not. And he is blaming all of them. The priests are doing things they're not supposed to do. The men, the women, the men, you know, to the children, everyone. He is angry. So Jeremiah, his third intercession, hast thou utterly rejected Judah? Hath thy soul loathed Zion? Why hast thou smitten us? And there is no healing for us? We looked for peace, and there is no good, and for the time of healing, and behold trouble. We acknowledge, O Lord, our wickedness and iniquity of our fathers, for we have sinned against thee. Do not abhor us for thy name's sake, and do not disgrace the throne of thy glory. Remember, break not the covenant with us. That are there any of the vanities of the Gentiles that can cause rain, or can the heavens give showers? Art not thou he, O Lord, our God? Therefore, we will wait upon thee, for thou hast made all these things. And Jeremiah is trying to save them, and it's not going to happen. And then the Lord said unto me, chapter 15, though Moses and Samuel stood before me, yet my mind could not be toward this people. Cast them out of my sight. Let them go forth. And it shall come to pass, if they say unto thee, whither shall we go forth? Then you shall say to them, thus saith the Lord, such as are for death to death, and such as are for the sword to the sword, and for the famine to the famine. And so are the ones for captivity to captivity. And I will appoint over them four kinds, saith the Lord, a sword to slay, and the dog to tear, the fowls of the heaven, and the beasts of the earth to devour and destroy. I will cause them to be removed from all kingdoms of the earth because of Manasseh, the son of Hezekiah, king of Judah, for what he did in Jerusalem. For who shall have pity upon thee, O Jerusalem? Or who shall bemoan thee? Or who shall go aid to ask how thou doest? For thou hast forsaken me, saith the Lord. Thou art gone backward. Before I will stretch out my hand against thee and destroy thee, I am weary with repenting, and I will fan them with the fan in the gates of the land. I will bereave them of their children. I will destroy my people, since they return not from their ways. Their widows have increased to me above the sand of the seas. I have brought upon them against the mother of the young men a spoiler at noonday. I have caused him to fall upon it suddenly and tears upon the city. She hath borne seven languages in which she has given up the ghost. Her sun is gone down while it was yet still day. She hath been ashamed and confounded, and the residue of them I will deliver to the sword before the enemies, saith the Lord. And he's telling her, you guys have died and you don't know it before the sun even went down. And they keep doing this. And it just boggles my mind. And Jeremiah is just, you know, and God is encouraging Jeremiah. And we can see that. But and he's angry. He's basically, he has told them, listen, these people are stiff-necked. They are wicked. They just don't want to change their ways. They only know evil ways, deceit, how to take advantage of one another, how to hurt one another. They don't follow my decrees, my statutes, my beliefs. They don't follow my commands. They don't do anything. There is no respect for God. And yet they're sitting here worshiping all these other idols that amount to nothing. The idols can't save them. They can't do anything. And God has made it clear. He said, let them save you for what about I'm about to do. Let them come to your rescue. Well, it's not going to happen. And we all know it's not going to happen. It's when you see all this, God is so tired. And he is angry, and he has just had enough. In today's world, it's different because when we, like I said, when we go over to, if we go next, and I'm going to go in here to, let's see here. And usually I have these all broken out. But if we go over here to Isaiah 43. And God is making it clear, fear not, for I am with thee. And this is chapter 43. I will bring the seed from the east and gather thee from the west. I will say to the north, give up, and the south, keep not back. Bring my sons from afar and my daughters from the ends of the earth. For everyone that is called by my name, for I have created him for my glory. I have formed him, yea, I have made him. So, and then he's going to tell about how he is doing a new thing. Forget the former things. I'm doing a new thing now. And we were kind of, you could see these prophecies. And you know, it's Isaiah, it goes to Jeremiah, it goes over to Ezekiel. So we're seeing all these different things. We get into Matthew, and we could come on over here, and we're seeing how this all ties together. Again, this is that. You know, where we're crossing over from the Old Testament into the New Testament, 63,000 times in cross references. And Christ is very clear. God's not saying anything that Jesus hasn't, you know, that Jesus isn't going to say. He's saying the exact same thing. We're just missing it. That's the biggest thing. So, And I mean, he's very, very clear on this. And for some reason, we can't do that. So when we look at today's world, and this is why I didn't want to get too much into the biblical today. I wanted to talk to you about more of what are we doing for ourselves today? And one of the biggest things that we do is how are we spreading or how are we being the light of the world? And one of the biggest things that we have that we need to do to bring the light is we have to tell our stories, the things that happened to us and how God made the difference. He's the one that came in and changed us, altered us, brought good things upon us. So those stories, even though they might be embarrassing, maybe they're hurtful, definitely at your low points in your life, because you really can't be saved unless you've been to that low point. You can, but what I mean is that you've relied on God when there was nobody else. And you came to realize that, you know what? I can't save myself. I can't do this myself. The only way that this will get done is by Christ God. So therefore, that's the most important thing that we're supposed to share today. And I see so much of what the Bible talks about, especially we have a place down here, and it's in South Carolina. It's called Soda City. It's a great place. Now, down there on the Saturdays, it doesn't matter what church or whoever they where they came from, they are on this big, loud box that goes around their neck, and they carry it on their waist. And it's the same thing over and over again. And they talk about how you need to repent, and you need to change this, and you're basically all sinners. And the problem is that when you go through the Bible, and we talk about this, surely they've already gotten their reward. That was made clear. But they go on with their long babbling, and they talk about just fear. Well, that's not true about God. It isn't about fear. Understand something. Anything that happened in the Old Testament, you pretty much got what you deserved, okay? And none of us deserve a thing. We already understand this. We're the most ungrateful creatures on this earth, and we're full of sin. You know, I don't want to compare my sins to anybody else's because, you know what, I'm no bright shining star. So I look at that and I say, okay, but I can't go around. How are you going to bring people closer to God if you're going to put them into fear? You better do this. And if you don't, you're going to burn. Well, you know, I have some feelings on this. And that is that number one, listen, none of us are worthy of being saved. None of us are worthy to even enter heaven. Matter of fact, we're the most unworthy creatures there are, really. And I'm grateful for Christ, and blessed are we all. And anything that we have, you know what, it's not ours. We can't take it with us. It's really, God has given you a responsibility to take care of it. And being responsible means you're being good to yourself. You're being good to your family. You're being good to your spouse, your significant other, your children, poor people, other people that are out there in this world. How you're relating to them, your kindness, honesty, empathy, sympathy, and your encouragement to others, especially if you know they're down. How we relate to other people in this world plays a huge factor in his walking in Christ. And again, here's that feed again. And we saw that in Matthew when God is washing their feet. And that was happening at the supper. And he stops and he starts to wash his feet, takes off his tourniquet from around his waist and drying them off and everything. They're like, "You're going to wash my feet?" But, you know, Simon Peter said, you're going to wash my feet? I should be washing yours. And he says, "You don't understand what I'm doing right now, but you will." And all these things are kind of interesting because they tie again. And if you remember the two apostles that were working and following Christ started to argue who's the greatest among them. And Christ is like, "Listen, why? What are you doing?" You know, whoever is last is first. Whoever is first is last. And what he meant by that and what he was discussing in that is you have to serve. Christ didn't come here to get his feet washed or to be served. The feet is walking in his ways. So you have to have clean feet. Remember, you're being cleansed. His body is being crucified so you can be cleansed. In order to do that, you have to have clean feet. You have to clean soul, a clean body, a clean mind, everything. You are being crucified with him, believe it or not. Because if you believe in him and you're doing this, understand that's the old you, the dead you. The meat suit you is dead. The spiritual you is alive. And in order to do that, even though we're here in this temporary confinement or body that we call it, you have to understand, though, that we have to walk in God's ways, listening, obeying his statutes, his decrees, his commandments, everything. And we have to stay on course, stay focused on it, which is a very hard thing to do because we're going to trip up. There is no way we're not. And it's going to happen every single day. And the closer that you get to God, the more somebody else is going to intervene, which in all of it ties together. It's really interesting. So if you go through, that's one of the biggest things that you had. Even if you look in the book of Ruth, and when Boaz was going up to take the land and her for himself, it was decreed off of the sandal. I'm holding up my sandal here. This is a witness between you and all of us. My feet walking in God, between God, you, and I, witnesses. And this kind of goes on through the entire Old Testament and the New Testament. So it's very interesting. And as we get on through this and we start to see this, how does this approach what you're talking about, walking in God's way and everything? Well, think of the parable in Matthew of the seeds. So the first set of seed that was being carried fell out on the road, and right away it was scooped up, which is people that they got taken away right away from Satan. I mean, it was just they had no ambition whatsoever to get to know God or the Son, you know, Christ God. The next group fell on the rock. Oh, it sprung up, great. But the problem was there wasn't soil, so it didn't get a good grip. It couldn't ground itself in there, and it got scorched by the sun. So that group's gone. The next batch fell into some thorns and weeds. And of course, it got up and, oh, yeah, man, it's great. We're following God and Christ and everything. But then it got choked out from the things that are going on in this world. You lose focus. And you realize, oh, wow, I've got this, this, and this. Now I've gotten away. I've strayed. And then the last was the ones that fell in good soil. They formed up and bear good fruit. And it's actually a wonderful thing. But so when you look at all these things and you can understand where he's coming from with these parables, you can understand that exactly what these meanings are. There's a lot of parallelism in the Bible. Theology in the Bible, believe it or not, poetry in the Bible. there's a lot of everything in it. Numerology, there's, you know, some astrology in there, because God makes that clear in Genesis. And he made the stars also and so that they would also guide them. I mean, it's so much to see on the surface, but if you really start to look at it, and the more you read it, and the more you read it, and the more you read it, you will start to see all these different layers underneath. And then you'll realize, holy smokes, there's like 15, 20 different things going on in all these settings all the way around. I mean, it's pretty incredible. And the depth of it, I said before in Genesis, when Jacob had his dream, and of course the name Jacob, deceiver, okay? And we saw this, the Bible is full of conflict and reconciliation. And we saw this with Jacob. Jacob was doing what? He was hanging on to Esau's foot when he was coming out, you know, just fighting each other, tumbling around, rolling in there. You know, poor mother is just like, oh boy. So not an easy thing to do. And of course, what was one of the first things that he did when they got older was he basically tricked his brother out of his firstborn status, his inheritance. And what did he do it with? Bowl of soup. Okay. So he gave up his birthright for that. And then he dealt, if you remember, there was Rachel and Leah, and he loved Rachel, but the father kind of tricked him, the father-in-law. He sent Leah in there. And it was like, okay, but you weren't supposed to do that. We agreed upon this. And eventually he tricked him back. And, you know, especially with the livestock he had, how he took care of the animals to make sure that he got the best of the cattle, the best of it, changing the blemishes and everything. And of course, the father went after him and he said, wait a minute here. When I first wanted to marry your daughter, you sent the other daughter in. And then you made an excuse. And then you changed my wages how many times? Over 10 years. And then I had to work another set of years. I've built you up. I have done everything that I said to you. And of course, what did the girls do? Well, they stole stuff from their father. They were not happy with him either. But he had all these other things going on too. Remember, Esau's coming. So now as he's riding, he understands, oh boy, surely my brother's coming. He's going to want to kill me because my mother told me, you've got to go. Rebecca said, go now, go to your relatives and get out of there. Because what happened there? Well, it's real simple. What exactly happened there with Isaac? He pretty much acted like Esau, go fix me some venison. I love the way you cook. And he came back wearing clothes and smelling like the hunter and talking. And he got curious about it and even said, you sound like Jacob, not Esau. So he was onto it a little bit, but he convinced them that he was Esau. So he was deceptive there. So you've got like four or five different things going on with Jacob about his deception and everything. And the funny thing is that when it came time for him to end up in the wrestling match, okay, and he's in this wrestling match with the angel. And we're not even talking about the dream, but we'll get back to that. But he's in this wrestling match with the angel. Now, as far as he's concerned, he's wrestling with God. And the reason for it is why? Because God will use the angels as messengers, Gabriel, whatever. Anyway, they wrestled and they tossed all night long. And the angel finally said, you know, what is your name? And he said, it's Jacob. And he said, no, now you will be called Israel. And he touched his hip. He threw it out of joint. So now he's walking with a limp. Okay. I mean, all these different things are happening to him. And then he's got to worry about going and facing his brother. And of course, before that, he has this dream. And Jacob's dream, you know, God is trying to get him to change his ways and to do things. So he has this vision. And he sees angels ascending and descending upon this ladder. It's narrow, a narrow ladder. He's got his head and he's sleeping. He's resting on rocks, which are by the base of this thing. We go into Matthew and we know from there, the parallelism's there. Narrow is the path. Narrow is the gate to get into heaven. Narrow is the ladder, okay? And you've got to stay on the ladder in order to get into heaven. Because if you veer to the right or the left, common sense tells you you'd fall. If you're going down a path and you need to get into the narrow gate, you have to stay on that path. It's narrow. You veer to the right or to the left, you're going to lose eternity. The parallelisms are there. They're solid. They're sound. And that's all the way back from Genesis, all the way up into Matthew. So as we're going through this and we're understanding the Bible and we're seeing all these different books, and of course, people today don't realize it's over 40 different authors, 66 different books, okay? And as we're going through this, all these people over the course of 1,500 plus years have sit there and wrote these books, put them together, wrote them. They're also witnesses. There's thousands upon thousands of witnesses. We know that over 500 people saw Christ after he was crucified. 500 people. More, probably. We know the miracles that he did. We know he existed. We can go back to Daniel. We can go back to Jeremiah. We can go back to Isaiah. We can go to Ezekiel. We know from Elijah. We know from Moses. Okay? And you see now, we actually know kind of a foretelling tale right here all the way back in Jacob's time too. So it's an incredible thing. And when people doubt it, it's not only backed up by writings and scripts, it's artifacts, it's times, it's dates, it places. They're finding, you know, sarcophaguses, they're finding wheels, they're finding all kinds of things, which proves over and over again. And then the Bible itself, reproving itself all the way through. And is it open to interpretation? Sure it is. That's anything. This world is open to interpretation. I mean, that is, you look at the world today, and how many times do you see on there, especially if you go to the internet, all these people are, this is when the rapture is going to happen. We know the times and the dates. Well, if that were true, then let me ask you something. Why does God make it clearly known, especially in Isaiah? My thoughts are above your thoughts. My thinking is above your thinking. My ways are above your ways. And you think you're going to figure God out? No, it does not work that way, okay? I think it was pretty clear. I mean, and yet these people all of a sudden have figured out, wait a minute, we've dialed it in here. We know when I've already been through probably 15, 20 different times in my lifetime of all these people that predicted the end of the world, and this is what's going to happen on what day, what time, what month, and everything else. One guy kept going through it like three different times. It never worked out for him. Well, gee, I wonder why. Okay? But he was so delved into these times and dates in the Bible. He was sitting there looking, and I'm studying. Well, I could have this wrong. I could have that. The reason that you got the whole thing wrong was you were missing the whole point of the Bible to begin with. The whole point of the Bible. And people are like, well, they left books out or they put books in. No, God's intervention, God intervening right there is what decided what was going to go into the Bible and what was not. You don't think that the man can move oceans and part seas? Not once, not twice. We've seen it three times now. So don't forget about Joshua crossing on over. So, but he can't protect or decide what's going to go into a book about himself. Yes, sure. I mean, think of it, that just listen to the logic that these people are saying. And they're going to tell you of, well, we know what angels look like and this and that. We have a description to some degree. Don't focus on those things. The whole point of the Bible is to focus on God. And people are like, well, what about the Book of Enoch? Okay, that's a Book of Enoch. But it does not focus on God, the most important thing. And the New Testament focuses on Christ. So you got to know, and you have to learn the Bible first in order to have any understanding of God. And you could be way off base. You know, we can't act like we're better than what we are, or we know more than what we you know, think. You have to stay humble. And I just, you know, keep praying to God, ask him for knowledge. And then if you don't know, ask somebody, talk to somebody. I'm not a preacher. I'm not a priest. I'm not a rabbi. I'm not a deacon. I'm not clergy, not a bishop. I'm not anything. I'm just a guy that loves to read the Bible. But we have to use what we've gone through in our lifetimes to make people understand and see the miracles that are before them, because they'll never see them. They will be blind to it or think that it never happened unless you can point it out to them and say, let me tell you what I experienced. This is what I went through. Explain to me how that worked out that way. And, you know, I've went through this. I've seen these things. I mean, I went through a few different terrible relationships, sickness, lupus. I have lupus SLE. I've had that probably all the way back 1990, and from the military, and they still deny it. But it's very interesting. Sarcoidosis. Well, that I proved. The leukemia, the enlarged white leukocyte leukemia. They acknowledge that. Okay, so it's. But dealing with those things, when I first found out I had the lupus, that was in 2004, and I had just moved back down south, and I was told at that time, 28 to 35 years was the average lifetime before it started attacking your organs. But they're coming up with new ways to treat it, and there's new hope and everything else. And so I have my two kids there. I was in the middle of a just horrible, horrible divorce, going through a bunch of stuff, been through probably one of the hardest times of my life. And I had these two boys that I had to take care of and stand on my own two feet. Very, very wicked and tough time. But I will tell you this, that I had this faith in God and everything else. And I was, you know, I just somehow knew, hey, you know what? He'll get me through this. He'll get me through this. So after my self-pity and everything else, I did. I got through it. And the next hit was a sarcoidosis attack, where it just kind of partially collapsed my lungs. My son was there for that. Then I had a couple times one time I had a sternum rub and, made it through that, allergic reactions, made it through those. And then in 2020, ended up getting told you have what they call lymphoproliferative blood disorder or blood disease. And they didn't know what's causing it or anything else. Instead of sending me to an oncologist right away, they waited. So they told me, hey, you better get the COVID shot, because if you don't get the COVID shot, you're going to die. Well, I did take the shot three times. And then I ended up with COVID. Then I ended up with long COVID on top of everything else that I got. Another bad relationship. And it was horrible, you know, those long-term relationships, when you have those, and I'm not blaming that other person, don't get me wrong, it's just horrible because that's how they end, horribly. Okay, if a relationship ends, it's either going to be bad or very, very bad. And it's like, hey, you know, that's reality. But went through that. And today, you know, I look at it and they figured out that it's, hey, this is what you got. You have what we call enlarged white leukocyte leukemia. So, and I was like, okay, what's the game plan on this? There is no game plan. We have to keep an eye on it. If it gets to the point where you need a bone marrow transplant, we can do that, or CAR T cell. The more I looked into the CAR T cell, it's not only is it expensive, but there's no guarantee it'll work. So, and it's the same thing really with bone marrow, but I'm not to that point yet. For whatever reason, God has blessed me. I have, you know, somebody new in my life. My life has calmed down. I medically had to retire. And I did what I did for 40 years. I loved it, but it was time to get out of it. During that time, you know, in all those years, you know, 35 years, depression, anxiety, stress, hopelessness, you know, they said, hey, look, you have bipolar too. So I'm on medication for that. I take all kinds of medicines for that because it's a roller coaster ride. So you could tell I took my medicine today, but, and I laugh at it because I've learned what triggers it. I've learned, what it causes, what, the ramifications of it are. So I'm very aware of it. And, you know, I try to explain this with the doctors too. They like to, you don't want to step on their egos. Their egos, well, I've been to medical school. That's all right. I've been dealing with this problem for 35 years. So let's sit down, let's talk about it, and I'll show you which way we should go with this. You know, but I put my faith in God. He has blessed me. He has watched over me. He has protected me. There's not a thing that he is not involved with. So I always tell everyone, you know, if you're going to live, put God first. And you have to keep him in the middle of everything. Keep him in the middle of your relationship. Keep him in the middle of your work. Keep him in the middle with your kids. Keep him in the middle with every single thing that you have. He must be involved. That's just how it is. He must be involved. And don't get too upset when things go wrong. For me, I get panicked and then, you know, I'm taking medicine for it, or it will make me so fatigued that I'm out. Now I'm pretty much at home. I can't stand or sit for long periods of time. I have a lot of medicines that I do take. I have to go and report a lot to the hospital to get checked out, updates, blood, everything else. But, and I hate going down there because every time I go down there, a cold for any of you is maybe a week and a half. That same cold for me is a month to a month and a half. When you have no immune system, it's like you don't want to be around a lot of people. There'll be small exceptions, you know. And I learned this, and I'm grateful. My mother is, you know, I helped take care of her. She is 92. So 91, going to be 92. So as I'm taking care of her, she made a point to me, and I disagreed with her. And she was sick, and I said, why are you going to church if you're sick? That's when I need to go to church the most. That's what she said to me. That's when I need to go to church the most. And I said, that's when the church doesn't want you there, because there are older people your age. And if you get them sick, just because you're doing okay with it, they might not. And I became very aware that this was going on at my church. So when I go there and there's people that sick, they're going and they're thinking, okay, I'm okay. But you're not thinking about everybody else. If you're sick, stay home. You know, stay away from people, because you might make it through just fine, but you never know how somebody else does. So you have to be alert and open and not be oblivious of these things. That's part of walking with God. The other part is telling people your story so that they can understand, so that they can see what they can get a feeling of what you're seeing, and why can't they see God? Every day, I see more and more miracles all the time. And people are like, oh, how are you seeing miracles? And none of us are. Define miracles. Define it. What is a miracle? Is it some intervention for you? Some intercession, special intercession? Is it, what exactly is it? I was having a problem about 3 weeks ago that I've been doing my Bible app. This is my fifth time reading the Bible. Doing the Bible app. I do it at home mostly because I haven't been to church, so I just read it all throughout the year. And I felt insincere when I was talking to God. It was insincere. And I'm thinking, man, and there's been a couple times where I've been on the show and I've been like, okay, I'm just not into this today. But the truth of the matter was, is that I'm reading the words. I could tell you most of the stories right out of the Bible. I don't know the verses quite yet, but I'm not supposed to. I have the rest of my life, I should be learning this. That was lesson number one I had to learn. It's going to take me a lifetime to get even close to being an understanding of God. The only way I'm going to get that is keep asking God for more knowledge. And if he blesses me with it, you know, that's awesome. But that doesn't mean he's going to give it to you. He might have different plans for you or different things he wants you to know. But number two was being able to look in the mirror and say, okay, this was a bad situation and this ended up horrible. And for these reasons why, what did I do to enhance that problem? What were my faults into this? You have to be able to look deep into the abyss, the mirror, into yourself and say, okay, what kind of negativity, what kind of faults, what kind of mistakes did I make that I brought this upon myself or upon the other person? And that's a hard thing to do. That's a hard pill to swallow right there. So I did that. Those things, when you get to that point, are they not a miracle? Are they not part of things that you know, people just don't see? Well, I still kept feeling this way. And so I'm going to continue on. I kept feeling this way. And as I'm going in and reading and everything like that, I felt really sincere, insincere about how I was saying prayers. And I always wanted my prayers to be perfect when praying. I mean, we know Christ says, you know, when you pray, go into the closet. And he's very clear. Be not ye therefore like unto them, for your Father knoweth what things ye have need of before you ask him. After this manner, therefore pray ye, our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, in earth as it is given in heaven. Not on earth, in earth. You know, and it's really kind of cool. So I'd always try to make sure that I'm saying it exactly how Christ says it, which is a good thing. But at the same time, I just didn't feel sincere. A lightning strike came and hit three trees in my backyard in one shot. One shot. Three trees. It went through the side of my neighbor's house. The bark exploded and shrapneled my whole neighbor's side of the house, broke her window and everything. Didn't touch my house at all. It did cook the TV sound system and the pump in the pond. And it did blow out the water drainage plastic lines in the ground. And when I say it blew it out, it put a hole about like this, you know, and just blew the plastic right out of the ground. But that was God saying, snap out of it. I'm showing you I'm right here, as if he hadn't done enough for me as it was. But see, that's what we are as humans. We want more. Show us more. Give me more. I need this now. Show me you're always there. And yet he is always there. And that's our errors. And being able to see that now is another miracle. And then there's times that I'm like, why me? Out of all the people in the world, why even waste your time with me? I know my sins are out there. Think about it. We broke every sin in the book. You think you haven't murdered somebody? Well, if you've insulted them, hurt their feelings, or rebuked them, or done anything else in your life which has shamed them, hurt them in any way like that, yeah, you have. You murdered them. You just did it a different way, but you still did it. You ever grab a pencil from work? Or fill out your thing at the bank and drive off with the pen? Well, thou shalt not steal. Guess what? Broke that one too. And it's the same thing with not telling the truth all the time. We could say, well, that's how I saw it in my perspective. Okay. But if we get the facts down and everything like that, guess what? Thou shalt not lie. You broke that one too. If you're down at the beach, and women, you're looking at men, or men, you're looking at women, and you're like, whew, got news for you. You just committed adultery, okay? Because if you're looking at that person in any way, shape, or form with an unpure heart, that's adultery. There's not a thing. How about arguing with your mom or your dad? Guess what? You didn't honor them. There's another sin. I mean, we go all the way down this line. You ever see something your neighbor has and you're like, man, he's so lucky I got that truck. And, oh, man, I wish I could afford something like that. Well, you just coveted. I mean, there's not one command that any of us can look at God and say, did you do this? Yeah, I did this. And you know what? Now that I think about it, it's an awful lot. And I did it more than once. So we really aren't worth it. The only thing that we can do is try to be better and try to work on it and give God the glory and praise he deserves. Tell the stories where you've come from. I don't care if you're an alcoholic. I don't care if you're a drug dealer. It doesn't matter. Can your story change somebody for the better? To walk with God, because God's very clear. Christ says himself, he doesn't want to lose one. No, not one. They've been causing havoc in the Old Testament from the beginning of time. And people try to change things and do this. Remember that apple? What apple? You mean the fruit? I mean, everything that happens, Eve didn't become Eve. She was the woman until they were getting kicked out of the Garden of Eden. That's when Adam named her. And there's so many things that you got to pay attention to. But how are you going to be able to relate and bring somebody closer to God? And let me ask you something. I used to work for veterans groups helping people with suicide. I stayed on the phone 6 hours one time not to give myself credit, praying to God, drinking coffee, thinking of what was the best thing to say to keep this guy alive. It was very, very sincere. And that was a suicide. And he didn't. They got to him. They were able to help him. Okay. And every once in a while, I got one single message from him, you know, that let me know that he was okay. And the funny thing is that your message to somebody is like dealing with somebody on a suicide line, because it's about life and death. So you have to look at it every time that you're out there and you're talking to somebody about God and you're talking to somebody about Christ. You're on a suicide line. Stand up. Do your job. Give God the glory. Give God the praise. He has put you right there at that moment, at that time, for a reason. You want the miracle? Seize it. Grasp at it. Jump at it. With that, guys, I am going to... hey, come here. I have the big boy here next to me, and he's ready to start barking. Anyway, we're going to get back to it all next week. The reason I wanted to read Jeremiah is because you can understand, especially when we're going through the Ten Commandments, I'm telling you how we broke them all. Imagine, just imagine how glorious, merciful, and great our Lord is, that even back then in the Old Testament, just from what those people were doing, God still had grace, mercy, and love for us. He still didn't give up on us. Now, I'm going to say that doesn't mean there weren't casualties along the way. And some of them, rightly so, all along. Well, everything that he does is just. So, but we have a job to do. We have a job to do. It's time to do your job. It's time for me to do my job. I've already done my first part of my life's work or whatever, and I loved it. And I'm blessed that God gave me that. But now it's to try to just one person. If this show can reach one person, I'm grateful. So, but start reading. You got to start somewhere, and you'll start to see all these different things. It's really kind of cool. It's the greatest true love story, the greatest true factual love story of all time. I hope you enjoy it. It's a great read. And then you get to read it over and over and over again. Best part about it is that it's going to take over and over and over again to understand it for the rest of your life. And just like you love your spouse, your significant other, your children, well, you are learning them every single day. You never graduate from learning them. You're just in the beginning of your schoolie learning them. You see what I'm saying? It's like from the time you're at kindergarten all the way to the time that you pass away, you're getting extra credit and everything else, trying to learn your spouse, your significant other, your children, the people that you love. You never really know them for sure, do you? One difference is in this book, every single time he is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And he loves you, and we love him, and that will never change. The people of the world, good luck learning them. That's a never-ending process right there. With that, take care, guys. Stu Scher is coming up, so I got to go. Bye-bye.